When it comes to making decisions, I have a hard time. Sometimes for fear of making the wrong decision, I just delay making any decision at all. And some of you who know me and my personality, you can understand that I have a little weakness that way. When we go out to eat, I have to think about it about a week in advance, because if we get in the car to do it, we'll never decide where to go. Most of you don't struggle with that malady. It took me nearly 5 years from the time I met my wife, from the time I met her till the time I asked her to marry me. That's a long time. And even when this church called me to be the pastor back in 2008, it took me a whole week for me, even though I'd visited twice, to make up my mind. I don't make decisions quickly. Now, that's not always bad. It's not always a disability. When a salesman comes to my door and tells me this deal is only good for right now, today, if I go away, it's never any pressure on me. I can never make a decision that fast anyway. I just say, okay, goodbye. I don't feel pressured by that, and I'm not suckered. So there are strengths and weaknesses to every character issue, and I just take a long time to make a decision. But you know, Jesus came to the disciples during his earthly ministry, and they immediately left everything, Mark says, and followed him. Now, how could they make a decision so quickly without hesitation? I could never have been one of the disciples. I would have stood there in my boots and said, not today, maybe tomorrow. So this has really intrigued me. Our theme this year is follow me. Jesus said to his disciples repeatedly, I mentioned last couple of weeks ago, he said it 18 times in the New Testament, it was always on the lips of our Lord, follow me. But what intrigues me is, why would these men follow Jesus and do it so quickly? Let's look at the text, one of the texts. There are a variety of ones related to the calling of the disciples. Here's one of them, Matthew chapter 4, verse number 18. And the Bible said, and Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brethren, Simon called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And he saith unto them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And they straightway, or immediately, left their nets and followed him. And going on from thence, he saw other two brethren, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, in a ship with Zebedee their father, mending their nets. And he called them. And they immediately left the ship and their father, and followed him. Why would these men make this decision? But even more importantly, why should we make the decision to follow Christ? Hey, they had to drop their nets and follow Jesus. Why Matthew had to get up from his tax collector's booth to follow Jesus. But why should any of us get up from where we are and follow Jesus? I do think there's a lesson here, if we can get to the bottom of it. And I've spent a lot of time this week trying to figure out what the bottom of it is, so I hope this will be helpful to us. It's not just, though, about them. It is about us. And I want you to think it in terms of, what is Jesus asking me to do? And will I make the decision to follow him? I want to give you two reasons why you ought to follow Jesus. And here's the point of the message. This is the sentence that if you get it, you get the message, and then you can go to sleep. All right? For all you sleepers out here, this is for you. All right? Jesus issues the call, but it's up to you to follow. Jesus issues the call to every believer, but it's up to you whether or not you will follow. I want to give you two reasons why you ought to follow Jesus, whatever he might ask you to do with your life. But first of all, I think the disciples followed Jesus because they believed him to be someone great. Jesus is a great person to follow. I think when we read the Gospels, we get the impression that Jesus kind of suddenly came by these men whom he'd never seen before, and magically and mysteriously, they just dropped their nets and like, I don't know who this guy is, but let's give it a shot. And while we might have that perception of the New Testament and the calling of the disciples, that is probably not what happened. They probably had several encounters with Jesus prior to the day in which he called them to follow him. And I want to show you this. There's actually probably a progression of passages. The first being John chapter 1. And I asked you a moment ago to put a finger there or bookmark. So we want to go to John chapter 1 next. All right, Gospel of John chapter 1. Picking up in verse number 35. John 1, verse 35. Why would the disciples follow Jesus and why should we follow him as well? Verse number 35 said, "And again the next day, John stood and two of his disciples, and looking upon Jesus as he walked, he said, 'Behold the Lamb of God.' And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. Then Jesus turned and saw them following, and saith unto them, 'What seek ye?' And they said unto him, 'Rabbi,' which is to say, being interpreted, 'Master,' 'where dwellest thou?' And he saith unto them, 'Come and see.' And they came and saw where he dwelt, and abode with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour, or about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. One of the two, which heard John speak and followed him, was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother." Now this is significant. This is the same Andrew that we just saw get called by the Lord over in Matthew chapter 4. This passage, though, precedes or comes before Matthew chapter 4. What I want you to see is that this disciple had already had an encounter with Jesus, and this encounter had led him to a conclusion, which we find in the next verse. Verse number 41. "He findeth his own brother Simon, and saith unto him, 'We have found the Messiah,' which being interpreted is the Christ." Andrew knew enough about Jesus to get it right. He connected the dots, and this man is the Messiah. Now, what did that mean? To you and I, we know that that's a Bible word. We know that's a term that refers to Jesus. But do we really know what it meant? In the Old Testament, the Messiah was the repeated one, repeatedly mentioned by the prophets, who was going to come and deliver the people of Israel. Now, all the Jews living in Jesus' day, they were expecting what kind of deliverer? A political deliverer. Because they were sick up to here with Rome. And they wanted to be free of oppression. Hey, and it's a lot like people today. You may have heard of the thing called liberation theology. And that Jesus primarily was trying to liberate people from oppression. But Jesus' ministry did not liberate the Jews from the oppression of the Romans. When he came as the Messiah, he taught his disciples he indeed was a deliverer, but it was a deliverance of a different kind. What deliverance did Jesus provide as the Messiah? I heard it. Spiritual deliverance from the oppression of sin and of darkness and of evil and of Satan. Now, is Jesus a political deliverer? One day he will be. He'll set up his kingdom. We just talked about that last fall. But primarily the Messiah came first to be a spiritual deliverer. And you know what? All the battery of teaching that Andrew had, though he was a fisherman, a layman in the marketplace, making a good living as a fisherman, he knew enough of his Hebrew Old Testament scriptures to connect the dots and say, this man is the Messiah. So I'm getting to this point. He knew Jesus before he responded to Jesus' call. He knew Jesus to be someone great. Now friend, let me ask you a question. Do you look at Jesus as someone great? It's doubtful that anybody would ever follow someone until they're convinced that that person is somebody worth following and is a great person. And I think Andrew believed that about Jesus, and so did the other disciples, or they would not have followed. I'm afraid, though, that not everyone believes that Jesus is a great person. You see, some, perhaps even in this little body of believers today, have cut their teeth on the Bible, have grown up on the Bible and God and church for breakfast, lunch, and supper for 2 decades or more. But the problem is, even though that you've been exposed to all of that, you haven't bought into the fact that Jesus is someone great. Jesus for you is something like a classic Disney movie. He's that main character that provides just a little bit of magic in your life at the right time or someone else's life, but it really doesn't do anything personal to you. He isn't all that great. And it's doubtful that anybody will follow Jesus until they're convinced that Jesus is a great person. And Andrew was convinced of it. He is the Messiah. So you may be coming to church, some of you sitting here, your parents might be believers, your family might be believers, but you're not a believer because you don't believe Jesus is someone great. I'd like to suggest some reasons why you ought to change your opinion about Jesus. This certainly changed the disciples' opinion about Jesus. First of all, it has to do with what you hear. Look at John chapter 1 again. I'm going to ask you to look at verse 38. We read it a moment ago. Then Jesus turned and he saw them following and saith unto them, "What seek ye?" And they said unto him, "Rabbi," which is to say, being interpreted, "Master, where dwellest thou?" Or, "Where are you staying currently? We'd like to know." Have you ever done this with someone? You want to spend some time with them. And maybe you're in a public place and your conversation is getting too a bit extended and the lights are going off and the preacher tells you it's time to get out, you know, we're closing the doors or something like that. Or maybe it's some other place where you have to leave. And what do? You say to the friend, "Hey, would you like to come to my house?" Or, "Hey, let's go out for a cup of coffee and we can continue the conversation." Now, this is apparently what happens to Andrew and another unnamed disciple. We're not told who he is here. They're just two disciples, and John says, "Behold the Lamb," and they follow. Andrew is one, and the other one is unnamed. Now, John has a curious habit in the Gospel that he writes of not mentioning himself in a text. He kind of likes to leave himself out and kind of be that third party. But there's some eyewitness details here of this incident that suggests that John may have been that second disciple. If so, it gives a whole lot more meaning to Matthew 4, which we read a moment ago, when Jesus extended a call to Andrew and Peter, they were brothers, and to John and James, who were brothers. But anyway, whether it's John or not, I can't be dogmatic. It may have been. These two disciples, Andrew's one of them, they ask, "Jesus, where are you staying?" And it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, you go anywhere at 4 o'clock in the afternoon with anybody in that time of the day, it's going to involve a sit-down meal, probably. And it probably means these guys spent the night with Jesus. Now, it's one thing to see Jesus in a crowd and say, "Hey, that's somebody great over there. You ought to get to know him." That's what John the Baptist told him. But do you know what they wanted to do? They wanted to sit down, and they wanted to pepper him with questions. They wanted to get answers. They wanted to find out if this guy is really as great as John was making him out to be. Now, I want to ask you a question. Have you done that with Jesus? Have you got to know Jesus? Have you sat down and inquired him with your questions and found the answers you were looking for from the Bible? It is doubtful that you will ever follow anybody until you get in line or hear what they say. And that's exactly what happened to these disciples. I want to show you this again. I asked you a moment ago to put your finger in Luke chapter 5. And so I'm moving quickly, but I'd like to get at the bottom of why these disciples decided to follow Jesus and why you ought to decide to follow Jesus too. If he's someone great, you ought to follow him. Now, it wasn't just Andrew and maybe John who heard Jesus teaching and speaking. There was somebody else. All right? And this is Luke chapter 5 now. Let's go there. And we want to start at verse number 1. And it came to pass that, as the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret. And he saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishermen were gone out of them and were washing their nets. And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed him that he would thrust out a little from the land. And he sat down and he taught the people out of the ship. Now, did you get that? He's down by the sea. He gets into a boat. The end of verse 3 says, and he taught the people from the ship. Now, that's significant because what's going to happen, and we're going to read it in a moment, in the next verses, is that he's going to call Peter and Andrew to follow him. After he had done what? After he had taught them. So all the disciples, as clear as we can tell, are getting some influence about Jesus' teaching. They've heard him speak before they decide that he's someone great and someone worth following. We are a day removed from Martin Luther King Jr. Day tomorrow. That man had amazing influence on the world and on our nation specifically regarding the Civil Rights Act signed in 1964 by Lyndon Johnson. And how was he able to galvanize and gather to him so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. Here's a picture of the March on Washington. You listen to him speak, and there is a power in his voice. And he was able to unite people because of what he said. And I want to say that Jesus must have had some kind of power when he spoke, but he got people's attention. Enough so that Andrew, after spending a night with Jesus, 4 o'clock and upwards, he came to the conclusion that Jesus is the Messiah. And Peter and Andrew apparently had the same opportunities. They're listening by the seaside as Jesus teaches the crowds. They've heard Jesus say something, and now they're ready to believe he's someone great and to follow him. But I don't think it's just what Jesus had to say. And here's a second reason that they thought Jesus was a great person. It did involve teaching, but number two, they saw the works of Jesus. You're in Luke chapter 5. I want you to stay right there because I want to keep reading. Verse number 4. Luke 5, verse 4. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught or a catch. And Simon answered and said, Master, we toiled all night, we have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word, I'll let down the net. And when they had done this, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net brake. And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ship, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both the ships, so that they began to sink. And when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord. What happened to Peter? He didn't just hear Jesus teach. He saw Jesus do something he didn't see other people do. Peter was a fisherman by trade. He knew how to fish. He'd fished all night and caught nothing. You know, don't tell me how to fish or where to put down the nets. I do this for a living. All right? This is not a good night. We'll come back out tomorrow night and we'll get a catch. But he let down his net at the word of Jesus, and he brought in a great multitude of fishes. So what's he say? Lord. He comes to the conclusion that Jesus is someone great because of what he did. Now I imagine that most people will never follow Jesus until they're convinced that he can do something great for them. Are you so convinced? Has he done some great things for you? You know, people won't follow Jesus until they're convinced that he is someone great. That's not all. I'm going to ask you to go back now to John chapter 1. Did you lose your place? I don't think I asked you to hold that, but John chapter 1, we see this in the next episode after Jesus spends an evening with Andrew and maybe John, picking up in verse number 43. The day following, Jesus would go forth into Galilee, and he findeth Philip, and saith unto him, follow me. John 1:43. Now Philip was up at Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Apparently, Andrew and Peter, that was their hometown where they grew up, even though during Jesus' earthly ministry, they were living in Capernaum. So Philip findeth Nathanael, verse 45, and saith unto him, we found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nathanael asked an important question, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? And Philip saith unto him, come and see. And Jesus saw Nathanael coming and said unto him, behold, an Israelite in whom is no guile or no deceit, no trickery. What you see is what you get. And Nathanael saith unto him, whence knowest thou me? And Jesus answered and said unto him, before that Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. Nathanael, one of the twelve disciples, becomes convinced that Jesus is someone great because he saw him under a fig tree. Now, Nathanael can connect the dots. He was some distance away. There's no way Jesus could know that knowledge unless he was divine. He saw me when I was under the fig tree. Some have suggested, I can't validate this, I'm just tickling your ears a little bit. Pardon me this little rabbit trail. But the fig tree may represent a place that Nathanael frequented, and it may have been his own private devotional spot where he met with God. And so Nathanael not only knew that Jesus knew where he was under the fig tree, but he's thinking, I was talking to God under the fig tree. And Jesus saw that, then he must be God. So the disciples are having some contact. They're having a personal encounter, and that personal encounter is leading them to believe that this is a great person. And because he's a great person, he deserves to be followed. And it's doubtful that anybody in this room will pick up and leave all and follow Jesus until they're convinced that he really is a great person. Now, I believe that I'm speaking to the choir, and that most of you, you're here because you do believe that Jesus is a great person. That he's not just a great teacher, which he was, and that did help the disciples get the fact that he was the Messiah, but he was more than that. He was a great worker. He could do things that only God could do. Have you come to that conclusion about Jesus? That he is someone great. You know, until you do, you will spend your life in a lot less noble pursuits. You will follow the same course as a man we know as Gandhi. Recently, I was reading a book. They commented on the fact that Gandhi had been exposed to the teachings of Christ through some Christian missionaries in South Africa. And here's what Gandhi told those missionaries. He said, "I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ." When asked why he did not embrace Christianity, Gandhi said it offered him nothing he could not get from his own religion. Observing, he continued, "To be a good Hindu also meant that I would be a good Christian. There's no need for me to join your creed to be a believer in the beauty of the teachings of Jesus or try to follow his example." So Gandhi, instead of pursuing Christ with his life, we know what his life was about. He gave himself to the independence of India from the foreign rule of the British Empire. And he, to this day, is a symbol of nonviolent civil disobedience in order to promote your cause. And it's no doubt that Martin Luther King was influenced by Gandhi, who preceded him with the same kinds of behaviors. Hey, did Gandhi give himself to noble pursuits? I would say yes, but lesser pursuits in the eyes of God, because he wasn't convinced of the greatness of the person of Jesus Christ. He says because of the testimonies of the Christians that he knew. You know, I'm trying to make this really personal, and I don't know if I'm getting it across, but I think you can be a believer in Jesus Christ and still spend your life with noble but lot lesser pursuits. Is your life about a career and a certain level by retirement? Is your life about your grandkids and how you're going to flatter them the next time they walk through the door? Or is your life really about following Jesus Christ? There's nothing wrong with a career. And there's nothing wrong with having a retirement. Those things are good ideas. There's nothing wrong with spoiling the grandkids. But that really ought not be the main emphasis of our lives. We ought to be passionate about following Jesus Christ. What is it that He wants me to do with my life? How can I promote His cause? How can I keep from being someone that Gandhi would say about, "I like your Christ, but I don't like your Christians"? How can I follow Christ today in such a way that He really is the chief love and the chief passion of my heart? I've entitled the message today, "Follow." It's a call to a decision. Jesus didn't just say follow and say, "All right, follow, have a great day." He was asking those men to do something. He was asking them to come. And that's what I'm asking you to do. Rise up from where you are and follow Him. What else is it that He wants you to do? What step does He want you to take? I mentioned in the program, I don't know if you read it, but following suggests that I need to take steps. I don't get anywhere following a leader by staying put. I've got to follow. I've got to take another step. And so ought every Christian, I don't know, no matter how long you've been a Christian, whether it's been 2 months, 2 years, or your whole life, that you've known Christ from the time you were a kid. And so maybe you're 70 or 80 now, whatever your age is, you ought to be moving forward. What next does God want me to go into? And follow. Are you getting it? Are you getting it? Jesus is issuing a call to follow. But it really is up to you to decide whether you will do that, or whether you'll just stay where you are in 2015 the same way you ended 2014, and by the time we roll around next year, you'll be the same person you were. No further along for God. So that's my passion for you. Stand up. Jesus is calling. Follow me. Where does He want me to go? What step does He want me to take? I'm in. I hope you'll join Him. And that you'll hear the call. And that you will follow. Hey, but I think the disciples are not only convinced that they were dealing with a great person. Secondly, and I believe this is equally important, I believe the disciples followed because they believed they were pursuing something great. The call to follow Jesus is no small decision. When Jesus asked them to follow, it wasn't about what they would be doing just on Sunday. It was going to follow, it was going to impact every day of their life. Not just for weeks, and not just for 3 years until Jesus died on a cross, but almost all the disciples would end up becoming martyrs. It would end up affecting the course of their entire life. You know, some of us are into Jesus up until that martyr point, and we're just like, okay. But following Jesus means going the whole way, and I'll have more to say about that in another message. But they were convinced of something else, not just that Jesus was a great person, but that they were on a path with Him to something great. So I've entitled the second point, The Purpose That Is Great. That idea of a great person and also a great purpose. I want to show you this from the text. I think that Jesus often works with us the same way He did with the disciples. He doesn't go for the whole enchilada all at once, but instead teaches us step by step, giving us smaller assignments and inviting us to come along. And I wonder if maybe somebody has put something in front of you recently, an opportunity. Maybe I've come to you, or someone else has invited you to be a part of this ministry, or to help out with this, or maybe to do that. And maybe it was easy for you to say no to me or to the other person in the ministry. But could it be that God was kind of testing you out and saying, would you come this far? I'm trying to get you ready for the next big assignment. I have a great purpose for you. But until you answer the smaller call, I'm not going to throw the whole enchilada on the plate. Now, I want you to think about that. You know, sometimes it is easy for us to say no. We've got other things and we've got other priorities and all of that. But maybe Jesus is reaching out through other people and He's asking you, follow. Will you heed the call? Here's what I think Jesus is doing. This is back in John. Are we still John? Are you still in John? I know I am. All right, John 1. This is back. Andrew finds his brother. This is verse 41. He says unto him, we found the Messiah, which is being interpreted to Christ. Verse 42, Andrew brought him, that's Peter, to Jesus. And when Jesus beheld him, he said, thou art Simon, the son of Jonah. Thou shalt be called Cephas. Or Cephas, which is by interpretation a stone. Now the first thing, try to put yourself in the shoes of Simon Peter for a minute here. This is the first time you've met a guy and he comes up to you, and this is the earliest account we have of any call. Peter may have seen Jesus teach before, but we don't know that he had a personal encounter. He's talking, and the first thing Jesus says to him is, says, you know, I don't think your name fits. I think we ought to change it. Now, how would that set with you? If you've met a stranger, or even someone that you've seen and know of, but the first thing he says to you is, I don't think your name fits, so I want to change it. We look at that as an insult. There's a young lady across town. She's a youth pastor's wife. Her name is Autumn. But I've really had a hard time with that because I always want to call her Amber. I don't know what that is about those two names, but Amber comes more quickly than Autumn does for some reason. So always when I meet her, it's like Amber comes first. I go, no, it's Autumn. You know, and I have to double check myself there. But I'm not the only one. I've said it a couple times in the front of our senior pastor, who's Dave Sturzbaugh across town. He said, everybody calls her Amber. She should have been named Amber. And but, you know, if we would do that, that would really just be an insult. But this is what Jesus is saying to him. He says, I want to change your name. And I don't want you to be called Simon anymore. I want you to be called in Aramaic, Cephas, which we normally say Cephas, or the Greek equivalent is Peter. Both words mean a stone or a rock. And so Jesus is saying to Peter right up front, I got a bigger purpose in mind for you than you think about for yourself. He's thinking about fishing, and Jesus has got bigger plans for Peter. I'm going to change your name. I'm going to make a rock out of you. Now, was Peter a rock? You read the Gospels. We don't have time to go through that. Peter ended up becoming a rock, but he wasn't a rock up front. He was always sticking his foot in his mouth. He was bold and impetuous and impatient and arrogant and all of that. Hey, if all the other disciples forsake you, not me, count me in. And Jesus says, hey, three times tonight you're going to deny me before the cock crows. Remember this? That's Peter. And where is Peter after he goes out bitterly weeping? He doesn't want to have anything to do. He goes back to fishing. Remember John chapter 21? And Jesus has to come along and bake him some fish by the sea, right? And has to kind of coax him back, go feed my sheep again and go do this. Because Peter, he's not a rock. He's a rock in the raw. But Jesus could see bigger things for Peter in the future. Hey, and what did Peter become after Jesus dies? He's resurrected, ascended into glory 40 days later. Who's the first one to stand up in the temple and start preaching Christ, that He is the Son of God, the Messiah from the Old Testament? You read Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 3, and who is it? It's Peter! It's Peter all the way through Acts chapter 10. He's doing all the preaching until this man, Paul, comes along and he gets saved. And what is it, Acts chapter 9? And he begins to take the showcase of the story in the subsequent chapters after Peter. Acts is almost, you can almost divide the book in half between Peter in the first evangelization of the Jews and then Paul taking it to the Gentiles. God turned him into a rock. Hey, we're all rocks in the raw, aren't we? We all have sharp areas of our character and maladies we wish we could fix. You ever seen one of those rock tumblers? Put a rock in there and tumble it around a few thousand times. You can take off some of the rough edges. I am so thankful that God, when He looks at my life and He sees me as a rough hewn rock, that He can say, I got a bigger purpose for that guy. I can make him into something. Wait till I get done with him. Friend, I don't know about you, but that makes me excited about following Christ. Because God has big purposes for me, bigger than I could even have for myself. I believe that, and all of us are that way. Could you just believe that God has that thing planned for you as well? A bigger purpose than you could even have for yourself. If Jesus could do that with misshapen Peter, what could He do with each of us? Hey, I'm out of time. I want you to flip one last time to Matthew chapter 4 where we started. Thank you for being good and flipping around with me. Oh, the verse will be on the screen too if you don't want to flip. Jesus changed the name of Peter to anticipate a greater purpose for him, but also He says to all the disciples that He calls in chapter 4, verse number 19, He said unto them, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. From fishers of fish to fishers of men, what possibly could He mean? Instead of reeling in the fish, He would be reeling in the souls of men. What a higher calling. And there is no higher calling than to be in the business of reaching people with the gospel. Why is it? Do we have any young people here? We're a little short on young people. Got a couple. Glenn qualifies, all right? There's my son. I missed him. And Elias, all right? Great, you're all the way. Why is it that when we think that if we serve God, that He's going to hold out on us? That we have bigger plans for our lives, and if God doesn't get in the way, we'll be able to get them done. But sometimes as young people, and maybe even as grown-up people, we think that. That God's just kind of, if I'm careful, God won't mess up my life too bad. And here is Jesus saying to the disciples, I want something bigger for you than you could. You wanted to be a fisherman, which was a noble, well-paying trade in that day. Nothing wrong with that. They weren't slaves. They weren't servants like a lot of the Roman Empire. They were on their own. They could make a good living at that. Nothing wrong with that occupation. But I have something bigger planned for you. Why don't we think that way about God? He's got bigger purposes for us. Hey, and we'll never follow Jesus Christ until we think that way, that He does have something big for us to do. What arrogance to think that God's holding out on us. There is no greater business than the business of souls. There is no higher calling than the calling of men to repentance. And there is no better life than the giving of your life to God. I don't care if you make six figures. I don't care if you are the president of a corporation. I don't care if you're the president of the United States. Jesus didn't call people to pursue their own dreams. He called them to pursue His dream. And I want to ask you, whose dream are you living for? Who are you following? I'm not saying or suggesting by this that all of us need to quit our jobs and go to seminary. Not everyone is called to full-time vocational ministry. I wonder at sometimes whether more people are called and we're hiding behind our careers or our dreams. But that's another message. The point is that every believer is called to follow Jesus into a pursuit that is much bigger than themselves. So no matter your occupation, your business ought to be Jesus. That's what I'm talking about. No matter your occupation, your business ought to be, how can I promote Jesus? Hey, can I help out at the church? Hey, can I take some of those coupon faith things and give them out to my friends at work? Maybe I can give out one of those bookmarks that say follow on. They got a church invitation on the back. Did I mention that earlier? Maybe. How can I use where I am to promote Jesus? And get a vision that the cause is Jesus, and that is my business, and that is a great purpose, and I'm going to follow with that. Hey, what if my employer gets upset at me about that? What if he writes me up? We'll take the warning and adjust to it, and maybe pursue the gospel a different way. But don't give up making Jesus your business. I think sometimes we really have, as American Christians, settled into this comfort little zone where we live in our careers, in our retirement plan, and our comfy houses, our costly vacations, and our business is ourselves. And we're missing the call to follow something much greater. So Jesus issues the call, but the question is, will you follow? I suppose it was about this time of the year, three recruiters came to the local high school. There was an Army recruiter, a Navy recruiter, and don't click the last one yet. Wait. And the Marine recruiter. It was supposed to be a 45-minute general assembly, and they were going to give the Army recruiter 15 minutes and the Navy recruiter 15 minutes. And the Marine recruiter, 15 minutes. So they got started. And the Army guy went over a little bit. The Navy guy got carried away. And before you knew it, there was only 2 minutes left in the General Assembly for the Marine recruiter to give his little spiel. So he came up to the stand. You can click him now. You're okay. And for the first 60 seconds, the Marine recruiter was absolutely silent. That was half his time. And then he spoke up. And he said this: I doubt that there are even two or three of you in here who could make it as a Marine. But if you think you can, you can see me in the dining hall after this session. I'll be willing to talk to the two or three of you I'm talking to right now. With that, he sat down. The assembly was dismissed. Kids went to the dining hall. And guess which recruiter was mobbed with people? They were being called to something greater than themselves, and that desire for greatness motivated them to come see him. Jesus is doing no less. He's calling you to a great person. And he is calling you to a great purpose. Will you follow? Let us pray.